Okay, this hour with our split program, we'll take your phone calls with Greg Little as we talk about Edgar Cayce, Atlantis, Egypt, and so many others, including the Bermuda Triangle. Next hour, Stephen Bassett joins us as we talk about his disclosure project, so get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Greg, before we take some calls, let's talk a little bit about Edgar Cayce. How did he get this gift, and at what point in his life did he get it?
Well, actually, Cayce discovered he was able to do these psychic sort of readings when he was 21 years old, and that was in 1898. And he initially did it by having a stage hypnotist bring him up on stage in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And he had had a voice paralysis for a couple of years, and he worked in a bookstore. And not being able to speak in a bookstore and you're trying to sell books is probably a little bit of a handicap. But on stage, Cayce was able to speak. And as soon as he was no longer on stage and not under hypnosis, he had his paralysis back. So he went to a local hypnotist who then hypnotized him. Cayce could speak. And under this trance, he asked the hypnotist to ask him to diagnose his problem and tell him what to do about it. He did. And the particular thing that he diagnosed and the remedy actually worked, and he could speak well. And the hypnotist then decided, hey, maybe we can have him diagnose other people. He did, and it worked really well. So local doctors got interested in it. And over a period of about the next 10 years to 12 years, dozens and dozens of doctors started working with Cayce. And then in 1910, the New York Times published an article about him calling him the sleeping prophet. And about his amazing ability to diagnose people's health problems in this trance. And then he got really famous. But it wasn't until the 1920s that Cayce started talking about the ancient world. Up to that time, everything that he talked about in these psychic readings were health-related.
What changed him?
Well, what happened was he was kind of blindsided. He did these readings for different people. He never charged anything for them. And this group of people asked him to do some readings. And when he went under, when he went into this trance, there was a person called a conductor. And the conductor is the person that's supposed to watch him. And when his eyes started fluttering, they were supposed to immediately start asking him questions. And Cayce remembered none of this. So when these people started asking him questions, they asked him questions about the ancient world. And all of a sudden, out popped reincarnation, past lives, wow. Atlantis, Lemuria, and on it went. Cayce was shocked by this. He was a fundamentalist Christian. He was a very famous Sunday school teacher at the time. He was very popular.
They would tape him or something, right?
Well, they taped him a few times. They wrote down every single word he said in the trance in his trance state, and that's what makes him unusual. There's 14,306 of his psychic readings where every single word is written down in them. And that puts him in a unique position to where people can actually research what he said and then match it up with what the later facts are.
Well, and not only that, Greg, did he not only talk about people's illnesses, but he also came up with remedies for
yes.
them.
Oh, yeah. His remedies were are very, very accurate. Most doctors that have studied it believe that he was extremely accurate in his health diagnosis and the remedies that he gave. Some of his remedies were pretty unusual. Some of them showed that he was clearly not a fake, and he was able to see things in different places, in physical places that other people couldn't see. One particular story, which is really isn't very long, he did this reading and he prescribed a substance called oil of smoke. Nobody had ever heard of oil of smoke, so they had another reading with Cayce and said, where do we get this? And he said, you need to get a hold of this pharmacist. So they got a hold of a pharmacist in another city, and he said, I have no idea what he's talking about. So they went back and did another reading with Cayce and said, he doesn't know what you're talking about. He said, tell him to go to the specific shelf in the pharmacy, move these bottles, and the bottle of oil of smoke is back there.
No.
The pharmacist went and did it, and there it was.
There, he didn't even know he had it.
I mean, just very, very bizarre stories like that. Lost items, he could tell people where they were. Anybody trying to get rich from Cayce, I don't know of a single Cayce story other than his predictions about the collapse of the stock market right before the Great Depression. He predicted that, so a number of people did get out of the stock market then, but I don't know anybody that got rich because of Casey's prediction.
The one thing he did say, which is still puzzling to me, Greg, and that is the physical makeup of North America once the water levels rise.
Yeah.
Did he ever set a date on that?
He said that the changes, that one thing he talked about in his predictions, and this is a lot of skeptics like to point out that, oh, all of his predictions haven't come true. But Casey said over and over that the future is not set, that mankind actually controls a lot of these things and that we make decisions. And what he would say is that if nothing changes, if people don't choose differently, here's what will happen. And as far as the Earth changes, the things that would occur in North America, he said that the changes would begin around 1997, and they will then progress. But he never gave a date for, like, the sinking of Southern California into
right.
the ocean, which I know is of an interest to you.
Absolutely.
He never talked about the date when Japan would disappear and sink. But he did give so many predictions that came true, and now they seem like old history. I mean, he talked about Adolf Hitler. He said that he would rise and he would fall. He foresaw World War II, even the date of America's entry into it, India's independence from Britain. There's loads of these things. The nation of Israel, loads of things Casey predicted. And the ones that have not yet come true are the West Coast being destroyed, other earth changes in America. I mean, I live in Memphis, Tennessee. Supposedly, Memphis is going to be oceanfront property. Now, whether or not we'll be part of the ocean or right on the edge, I don't know.
Well, see, whether I'm in L.A. or St. Louis, I'm going to get it both ways here.
There
because,
you go.
You know, I can't get away.
The Great Lakes are supposed to drain through the Mississippi River, and then the Mississippi River gets enormous when all this takes place, which, of course, the New Madrid Fault, which is a huge earthquake fault line running basically from New Madrid, Missouri through southern Arkansas. It's a very active fault zone.
And Canada is eaten up too.
Yes. That part, North Canada, in the area of the Great Lakes, is supposed to have problems also. Mm-hmm. And all that, those are things that Casey said are going to take place.
Well, maybe they would happen in, let's say, 50,000 years, 100,000 years. Who knows?
Yeah, he did not give an absolute date when that would occur. But he did say these earth changes will occur.
He could have been a time traveler, for all we know.
Yeah. Well, he did travel through time in one way of looking at it, because he said that he had many past lives and even talked about a future life. I was going to say a future past life, but I don't think that's possible.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Rena in Rochester, New York. Hi there.
Hi, Noria. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, I'm glad you got through.
Yes, this is the first time I call. I wanted to tell you about an incident that happened to me and my father when we were traveling from the Dominican Republic. Somehow, we got too close to the Bermuda Triangle, and our plane got pulled down really, really fast. And the person that was driving the plane picked it up really quickly, and our stomach was going up and down.
Oh, man.
And so they kept pulling us down, and everybody started to cry. Everybody started to pray, and he announced to put the seatbelt, you know, and he said that we're too close to the triangle, and he's going to do whatever he can do, start praying. He even told us to pray, you know, and so it kept pulling us. I tell you, we had such a struggle that day, at least 15 minutes fighting not to be pulled down. Something is down there.
You could feel it pulling you, huh?
I'll tell you one thing, Nori. Our plane was, I don't know, something was really weird that day, because that day our plane kept being pulled down, and then finally when we got out of that one, we arrived to New York City, and there was so much snow we couldn't, you know, go down. So they sent us back and to go circling. Then they said,
oh,
we can't. You have to go to Massachusetts. We were riding to Massachusetts, and they said, no, you have to go back to New York City. We were about to run out of gas.
Yeah.
And finally, we got down. But I tell you one thing, Nori. I'll never forget that experience as long as I live. I am older now. I'm 56. I was a young girl then. And this is something that every time I talk about it, it makes me shake because my foundation was really shaken that day. If it wasn't for the prayers and because God, you know, he loved us so much that he pulled us out of that one, right now I wouldn't be talking with you. I'd be under the sea.
Yes, you probably would. You'd be one of our statistics here, wouldn't you, Greg?
She'd be one of the missing in the Bermuda Triangle. And by the way, Casey says that prayer does make a difference. And actually, there's a lot of research that tells us that prayer makes a difference. It does have an effect.
I remember when I was a kid, I watched a movie, and it was Atlantis was in the movie. It wasn't a documentary. It was a movie. And they were warring with huge crystals.
Yes.
Huge. You remember that one?
Yeah, oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then they sank, and the crystals went down with it.
That's right.
And there is reportedly this massive crystal down there that is affecting the Bermuda Triangle.
That one theory, that all comes straight out of Casey's readings. That movie was a little bit of Plato, but a whole lot of Casey, because Casey's story of Atlantis is probably a lot more interesting than Plato's. But yes, the crystal, a lot of people believe there are several of these there. I can't tell you that I see any evidence of it, but it's certainly possible. There is a story of a guy by the name of Dr. Ray Brown, who claims to have found a crystal in the apex of a pyramid in the Berry Islands, which is actually about 150 miles due east of Bimini.
What does your gut tell you, Greg, about all of that?
You know, I don't have a feel. I believe that there's definitely something there that's unusual, that's odd. Whether or not it's some sort of power source from Atlantis, I can't honestly say that I have any gut feeling at all. I just know there's something there. I mean, this building that we talked about first, that was a shock because I honestly never expected to find something and say, okay, that's a building, just where it's obvious. That's what we were hoping for.
Yeah.
I never expected to find a Bermuda Triangle plane. We weren't looking for those to start with. And then that really made me... take notice that there is something very weird there. These planes, these people had enough time to radio in, yet they never seemed to radio in.
They thought they were okay.
That's the scary part about it. I mean, I don't really understand it. My gut tells me there's something there, but what it is, I don't know. I just find it hard to believe that there's some massive crystals down there creating this. But let me tell you, it's not beyond possibility. It is possible that that is what happens. I just don't have any evidence of it.
Well, and what were those Avengers? They were
Torpedo Avengers. That's what we'd love to find.
Navy Avengers,
and,
right?
And that's why Bimini's actually considered the heart of the Bermuda Triangle. I know that it's a very large area, and Bimini's right on the edge of it. Andros is part of it. But those Torpedo Avengers, that's the airport we used, by the way, the old Fort Lauderdale Airport. That's the one that we use. It's now a private airport. And there's actually a propeller there and a monument that has the name of all the people of Flight 19 right at the entrance to that airport.
He was so lost, the leader of that series of plane flights. So lost from Flight 19. They just all followed him into the ocean or they got pulled in.
And I find that as a pilot myself and flying out in that area so many times and there's so many islands, it's incredulous. I don't understand how in the world he could have gotten that disoriented. The only way that the only way I can see it is that if their compasses were pointing them in the wrong direction, when you're in pilot training, you are trained to trust your instruments, never trust your eyes. Never trust your gut, trust your instruments. And so if their instruments were pointing them the wrong direction, even though everything told them it was wrong to go that way, they would follow their instruments.
Yep. Next up, let's go to Osceola, Wisconsin. Jeremy, east of the Rockies. Jeremy, go ahead. You're on with Greg Little.
Hi, George. I am a big fan of yours.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
This is the first time calling, and I've been listening avidly.
Perfect.
I had a question. What do you guys think really happened to Amelia Earhart?
Edgar Casey has a great reading about Amelia. Did you know that his family, Earhart's family went to Casey several times.
I did not know that.
To get right. There's actually, on the Casey website, there's a story about the Amelia Earhart readings. And then, according to Casey, initially, she did, I mean, he gives the basic location where her plane went down. And that she was alive for a while. They'd both been hurt. The guy that she was with her, I can't remember his name right now. He died when the plane crashed. She was hurt, but she lived for a couple weeks thereafter, and then it was just too late. What happened to her? I believe she crashed somewhere on an island and died. That's what I think.
And you heard about that story, too, of one of the Rockefellers. Remember, he got, I think he was in New Guinea or somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think Casey had it. You know, Edgar Casey did a reading on Woodrow Wilson right before he died, and one of the things that they were trying to bring, they actually brought Casey into the White House. They sneaked him into the White House. He went into Wilson's bedroom. Wilson, he did a reading on Wilson, told them that it was too late, that he was not going to survive, and there was really nothing they could do. And then he gave Wilson the bad news, and that was that the League of Nations was going to fail, because that's what Wilson wanted his legacy to be, the League of Nations.
Didn't his work, his trances, his readings, didn't that eventually beat him down and kill him?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. He was told in the readings repeatedly that he should not do more than one a day. But he became overwhelmed. When he got famous, he started getting literally thousands of letters every week from people that had heartbreaking stories. And they would ask for help, and he just couldn't turn anybody down. So he started doing readings all the time.
Yeah.
And they would send the letters out. They transcribed everything. They sent copies out to everybody. They kept copies. And it kept telling him that it drained him, that there was too much energy that he was using. And he died. He actually died, I think it was 65 when he died. He died in 1945. Jeez. Born in 1877, died in 1945.
Fred Noonan was with Amelia Earhart.
That's right, Fred Noonan, yep. In the Casey reading, he said that Noonan had died in the crash. There's a couple of readings, and those are on. ARE members get some really interesting benefits. There's all these little stories they tell. And actually, on their website, they've got an offer to your listeners. They love Coast to Coast. Of course, a lot of people that would be Casey members would love your show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and vice versa. You know, I go to their website all the time. I mean,
you need to go and speak at the ARE, George.
Yeah, we should do that. We should work on that. And, you know, on the time where I'm in St. Louis, it's not too far.
Well, you know, it's a ways. They would love you there.
No, from St. Louis, only about an hour and a half on a plane.
Yeah, a plane's not far.
No.
You don't have to go through Bermuda.
No, I was going to just say that. I'm not flying that way. Hey, Greg, give out your websites. We're going to take a break and come back with final calls. Go ahead.
All right. The Casey is Edgar Casey, EDGARCAYCE.org, which is O-R-G. And then APmagazine.info.
Super. Greg Little, he's got a number of books and DVDs out, too. Great researcher into the life of Edgar Casey and his own travels looking for Atlantis. Next hour, Steve Bassett joins us. We'll talk about the Disclosure Project here. Steve's going to England in another week and a half or so, so he'll talk with us about that as well. And I shall be right back with final phone calls. Those of you on hold from Cleveland, the state of Washington, Indiana, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, and we'll take the rest of your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Oh, for just pennies a day. You know, I normally say less than 25 cents a day, but it's really pennies a day. You can become a Coast Insider. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com, fill out the information, and there you are, a member of the elite club. Have some fun. We'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls with Greg Little on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Greg Little. Greg, what's your take on the Bermuda Triangle? What do you think is going on?
I think that there's some sort of strange anomaly that is related to weather, perhaps electromagnetic fields. Maybe it's a strange, subsurface magnetic field or something. Maybe crystals, but I think it's just a magnetic field. And then there's something else that's probably indescribable going on. I'm not sure how to even say it, I mean, after our own experience. And then there's a lot of pilot error and just a lot of mistakes that occur. And for some reason, I mean, the caller, the woman who called earlier, who talked about her flight from, I want to say it's Haiti, but Dominican Republic, she I mean, it could have been like that. It could be a plane that has some sort of a sudden problem, and before the pilot can actually radio, the thing is in the water. That's the kind of thing that happens. Now, why? I don't know. I mean, the planes that we've found, it's inexplicable to me why they're there. I mean, there's some of the stories of the Bermuda Triangle are just plain stupid. One of them is this plane took off in 1968 from Grand Turk. 10 minutes after it took off, the pilot radioed back and said, "I'm coming back because I forgot to refuel." He was never seen nor heard from again. It was him and his 30-year-old girlfriend. But in 2007, we found the tail of that plane 400 miles away. It was 39 years later, we found the tail on land 400 miles from where he went in the water.
Makes no sense.
No, and I can't explain it. So, I mean, I don't know. It's very bizarre. I don't know what to make of it.
Okay, next up, let's go to Arlington, Washington State, west of the Rockies. Hi, Arlington.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
George, it's wonderful to be able to talk to you. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. And, Greg, it's wonderful to be with you also. I believe I have some information that would be really helpful to your quest.
Too.
I attended Sonoma State University from 75 through 83. I took parapsychology. I was in a club called Ubiquity. But by the way, before that, let me just say that I grew up in Miami, so I'm well aware of the Bermuda Triangle, and I heard of quite a few strange things occurring. In 75, I went to California, started school there, got into Ubiquity, and in probably 78 or 79, there was a group of people that came up from, now, it's been a long time, so I don't actually recall the area that they actually lived in, but I think it was the L.A. area. This is what they said. They mounted a group, an expedition, in the very early 70s to go out and research the Bermuda Triangle based upon Casey's information. I studied Casey also, so I'm pretty much aware of what you're talking about. I've heard it before, and it all seems to fall into place. This is what they said. They had, took a group of psychics with them, clairvoyants. Before they went, they sat down, meditated, and I believe through remote viewing also, they were able to draw certain pictures of what they thought they would find when they got there. Now, one of the things that they drew was a machine, a type of, they didn't describe exactly what the machine was, but I thought it looked like a tractor. If I can remember correctly, and it was the color green, if I remember correctly. Okay. Once they got now in, into the expedition itself, they took with them a 33-foot remote sub, and they also had divers, hard hat divers, deep sea divers. And they went to that area that you're talking about between Andros and Bimini. I had asked them if it was off Andros where they found made this finding, and they said yes. Every day, the psychics would get together and meditate in the morning. I think it was at 10 o'clock, and then in the afternoon at 4 p.m. And they would discuss what they were thinking about, what they saw, what they read.
Well, did they actually find this tractor-like device?
Well, yeah, let me go on
with
this
quick. Okay.
They did locate, this is what they said, it sounds very very fantastic, but I have no reason to doubt what they said. They did discover a city that was under the water and three pyramids. Around one of the pyramids, there were several domes. There were either three of them, seven or 12, I don't recall how many, but they were placed around the pyramid evenly. When they made the find upon that one particular day, they were viewing the pyramid, and there were three-sided pyramids, and there were three of them that they located, and a city nearby. On that particular day, they saw the one pyramid with the domes. When they went down the next day, there was an opening in the pyramid, and outside of the pyramid was that machine that they had drawn before they went on their expedition.
Jeez.
Interestingly enough.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Upon finding that, huh?
Go ahead. Finish the story then.
Okay. Upon finding that, they sent the divers down. Now, this is the most amazing, incredible thing. They went in to the pyramid, and what they saw was rather fantastic. Coming up from the base of the pyramid were like two arms extending up.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Two arms extending up with hands holding a crystal ball, a circular crystal ball, and the hands were feminine. And these hands
like a huge statue?
No, it's like two hands that are holding something sticking up from the bottom. I've actually seen the crystal ball. It's actually in Arizona right now.
Is it small, Greg, or big?
It's about the size of a bowling ball. That's a good way to put it.
All right. So he's on.
Dr. Ray Brown. Ray Brown is the one who found it. I know the exact. And there's actually on the internet, if you go onto YouTube and you look up, let's see, it's on In Search of the Bimini Road, and there's two parts on it, and it's at the end of part one and the beginning of part two. Ray Brown is actually on there. You can see the crystal. It has a pyramid shape inside the crystal. The crystal's still around. It was the last time it was shown was 10-10-10. It's coming out 11-11-11 and 12-12-12, being shown publicly.
And that'll be it.
And yeah, that's it. And the crystal, Ray Brown, they claimed everybody that was on, all the divers died except for him. But he's on that show. You can actually see the crystal. You can see the hands that are coming up, holding it, sort of cradling it in two hands. I don't know. The stuff about the psychics and all, that kind of threw me in the beginning. But as soon as he got to the part of the crystal, that is the story of Ray Brown.
And that's a legitimate story.
Well, it's on it. You can see it on In Search Of. They really did a great recreation on it of the hands. The crystal ball is there. It does exist. It still exists today. I can't remember the name of the guy who's the keeper of it. I know where he works. He actually works in one of David Childress's stores in Arizona. Cottonwood, Arizona.
Let's assume for a moment, Greg, as Cremo has said, that civilizations might be hundreds of millions of years old, hundreds of millions of years old, and that earthwide calamities, catastrophes have wiped them out.
Yeah.
It's possible then that Atlantis did exist.
Absolutely.
And had high technology.
Plato said that there were many civilizations before the current one, and that he said there have been many and diverse destructions of mankind, and they come from fire or water, from things that move around the earth in the heavens. Plato said that. Casey said the same. I do believe that there have been many destructions of civilizations. I wish we could find a piece of it. And by the way, I didn't get to say this. I want to thank the guy that called and told that story. That's a great story.
It is a good story. Okay, Sandy's in Cleveland, Ohio. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi.
George, I, to the two of you, George, you've asked the question periodically about why aren't we finding the Hall of Records under the Sphinx,
right,
where is
right.
And all that. And this gentleman had mentioned some time ago about how the tomb and the tunnels were discovered, but he said it's like they just suddenly appeared, you know, where'd they come from? Well, I had read years ago, it was either from Edgar Casey or Arthur Ford, you know, channeled through Ruth Montgomery, that supposedly Edgar Casey had said at some point that when the Atlanteans had hidden these records interdimensionally, and that when we as a race of human beings, where consciousness had evolved to the point where we were ready to understand what was in these records and be ready to use them, then our consciousness being that much more advanced and elevated, or we would have evolved, we'll be able to see it and perceive it. And suddenly it will seem like it suddenly is there where it wasn't before.
That's basically correct. Casey said the time had to be right and humanity's consciousness had to be right before it would be found.
So it's always been there. It's just we haven't been able to see it because our eyes can't perceive it yet.
Well, that's probably the way it is.
Or vibrationally, we're not keyed in yet.
Or it's blocked. Like in the case of Hawass, what we discussed earlier, it's kind of like you've got certain personalities that are kind of standing in the way, blocking things, which is bizarre because Hawass is, he's a friend, actually. He's a friend to the KC organization, and he does believe that there's something there. He doesn't like to call it the Hall of Records. Hawass likes to call it the Green Chamber or the Chamber of Toth.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
What a discovery that would be if we ever found
it. Oh, my, yes. That'll be great.
Why aren't we, as a nation, investigating all this? Or are we doing it quietly, clandestinely?
No, I don't think the nation's investigating this. I don't. If it had an obvious military application, we would. Or if it, I mean, the top of your show, you talked about the our debt and our deficit and all that, and people are just consumed with our day-to-day lives,
yeah.
George.
Yeah, they are.
It's like the Bermuda Triangle thing. There's nobody else out there looking for this.
Well, I remember when they were going to have a disclosure news conference back around 2001 and the tragedy of 9/11 hit.
Yeah, it's always something.
Yeah, there's no way you can talk about a UFO case when you've got that kind of a problem.
Right.
People aren't going to listen.
Absolutely.
Brian is in Centerville, Indiana, first-time caller. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Brian.
All right.
I was just calling to discuss Tiwanaku, Pumapunku, and the pyramids off the coast of Japan.
Underwater. All are very similar, Greg, aren't they?
Yeah, Yonaguni, I believe, is man-made. I just don't buy the idea that the underwater structure off Japan, I think it's actually off Okinawa, but that's clearly a man-made structure. Tiwanaku, Teotihuacan, which is in Mexico, those structures, I mean, they're all incredible. And even in America, mounds, we have our oldest mounds go out there to 3,800 BC. And we're not talking about small structures.
They're huge.
The one that dates to 3,800 BC, 5,800 years ago, the earth in the structure would fill the Great Pyramid 30 times. We're talking about enormous structures built 5,000 years ago in America. Now, they're built out of earth, but we don't really know how old the South American structures are.
No.
Tiwanaku is a good example. Nobody really knows how old it is.
Let's go to Albany, New York. Mark's with us east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, George. I've been listening for years. I've been trying to get on every time you have somebody with Casey in Atlantis on.
Well, you did it this time.
Years ago, probably 20, 25 years ago, I had what I thought was a dream where I sat and talked with a man named Edgar, like a frail older man, and he was telling me the thing with the Bermuda Triangle is it's Atlantis, their reactor. It's all controlled with crystals, and in the last pole shift, it changed polarity, and it's actually pulling things down instead of generating. And the same thing with the Hall of Records, by the way, that they're not picking up a void. It's a room full of crystals.
Yeah. Well, there's supposed to be a crystal in at least one of the Hall of Records, which was called the Firestone, and another one has the emblem of it. I have heard that. I had forgotten about the way you described all that, and it's a great description. And it may be true. I mean, that may be absolutely true. So in the dream you had, do you believe it was Edgar Casey?
Well, I didn't make the connection until I started listening to Coast to Coast.
Ah.
And I started hearing people talk about this man named Edgar and Atlantis. And it reminded me of the dream. And like I said, I've been trying to get through for probably 8-10 years.
Yeah. You need to look up some of Casey's readings on that and see if anything sort of rings a bell with you.
I'll have to do that. I haven't tried that yet, but yeah, I'm going to have to.
Greg, I was obsessed with Casey when I was younger. I would read stories about him, his books. I've got his medical journal book, basically, that has remedies all over the place. Just obsessed with his work.
Well, I still use Casey remedies. I know loads of people that still use them.
They work?
Yes, they do. They do. And I actually, we talked to my physician, knows a lot of remedies. He recommends a lot of things. And they're inexpensive. That's the other thing. They're easy to do, and they're inexpensive.
I bet pharmaceutical companies have used some of his recommendations.
Well, they do, and there's companies, actually, that's all they do. They make
Casey products, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to Diana in Houston, Texas. Hi, Diana.
Hi there. It's a pleasure to speak with you guys tonight.
Thanks.
I had a vision several months ago that at the center of the Earth's core, there's a geodesic crystal that revolves, and it's that there's a fluid around it that is actually what we call fossil fuel, but it's the embryonic fluid or something that so it's viscous, so this crystal can turn. And in this vision, and I don't have visions very often. Anyway, it's like we're the only carbon-based life form, at least in this universe, and somehow or another, there's a connection to the fact of having this crystal at the center of the Earth. Was there ever anything in his readings that
back that up?
Not that I know of, no. As far as carbon, the only carbon-based forms, I don't think Casey ever used the term carbon-based. If he did, I'm not aware of it. But no, it's an interesting vision, and there's a lot of symbolism to it.
Did Casey ever say, Greg, that we have already been to the moon before? Of course, he wasn't even around then, I don't think, was he?
No, he did not. Not to my knowledge. He said that there was consciousness that had been to the moon. Human consciousness had been to virtually every planet. And lots of stars that are, he mentioned a number of stars. Arcturus is one of the more important ones for some reason. But he talked about our consciousness residing on other planets, and that it was actually a jump from one spiritual form to another, different levels of consciousness, spiritual consciousness, as you move from one planet to another.
Well, you keep updating us, Greg, on your searches, and we'll keep talking about it on Coast to Coast AM. Up next, Stephen Bassett joins us with his talk about disclosure on Coast to Coast AM.